Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, June 13th, day number 164 of 2013. And tonight, well, good old Leslie has a great topic for us tonight. We're going to be talking about the history of beer. And I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to this because I've got some food. I've got the game on TV. I mean, I feel like I'm at the stadium. And we're going to be talking about beer tonight with Leslie and with Barry Jacobson. He's going to be joining us as well. So it's going to be an absolutely fantastic show tonight. So sit back, get yourself a beer, and enjoy the show with us tonight. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, available in print as well as Kindle. You know, if you go to the website, you can order a book, and many of you did. And I wanted to say thank you tonight to all of you who ordered a book for your father. And you had me dedicate the book, and that was a great treat for me, as well as last month when you dedicated a book to your mom. You know, for me, it's a great pleasure to do that, to actually write a book and then dedicate it to your mom or your dad or your Cuban grandfather, Cuban grandmother. It was a real treat. And I want to thank all of you who took advantage of that opportunity, and I want to thank all of you who have who've purchased the book. It's been an absolutely wonderful, fantastic experience. Well, I told you that we're going to be doing a show about beer tonight, so we're going to go out to San Diego and catch up with Leslie. But before we do, I've got a little music for you. This is, you know, we had this fellow in our program, Mark Gunn, and we had him on our program, I guess, a few months ago. We should have him back. He was a lot of fun to talk to when he was on our program. But enjoy this one. This is a song about beer. I think you're going to like this one.
Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. A long time ago, way back in history, when all there was to drink was nothing but cups of tea, along came a man by the name of Charlie Mott, and he invented a wonderful drink. They made it out of hop. He must have been an admiral of salt and over king. And to his praises we shall always sing. Look what he has done for us, fill us up with cheer. Lord bless Charlie Mott, the man who invented beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. The Curse Bar, the James Pub, on the wall as well. One thing you can be sure of is Charlie's beer they sell. So all you lads and lasses, 11 o'clock you stop. For 5 short seconds, remember Charlie Mott. A 1, a 2, a 3, 4, 5. Hey! He must have been an admiral of salt and or a king. And to his praises we shall always sing. Look what he has done for us, fill us up with cheer. The Lord bless Charlie Mott, the man who invented beer, beer. Tiddly beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Tiddly beer, beer, beer. A barrel of malt, bushel hop, stirred with a stick. The kind of lubrication to make your engine tick. 40 pints of wallop a day, keep away the quack. It's only pence, halfpenny, and 1 and 6 intact. A 1, a 2, a 3, 4, 5. Hey! He must have been an admiral of salt and or a king. And to his praises we shall always sing. Look what he has done for us, fill us up with cheer. Lord bless Charlie Mott, the man who invented beer, beer, beer. Tiddly beer, beer. Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. The Lord bless Charlie Mop.
All right, well, that's our good friend Mark Gunn. The man who invented beer is the name of that song. Let me say hello to Leslie Eastman. She's delighted, the lady who invented the beer show. So how are you, Leslie?
Good evening, Silvio. Happy to be here. A fun topic. Blending, interestingly, three of my passions, history, science, and capitalism. So really delighted to have an excellent array of guests tonight to touch upon these subjects with a topic near and dear to the heart of many men, beer, in honor of Father's Day coming up this weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely, Leslie. Now, did you like that song?
Yes, I did. You know how much I like Mark Gunn. He's got a sense of humor and a great voice. So
he really
always
does.
Love to hear songs.
You know, we had him on the show, as you recall. We had him on the show a few months back. I think it was the night that we did the Halloween show, as I recall. And he's just a fun guy. He's a fun guy to do a show with. So I thought I would pick that song. Now, we've got Barry joining us as well tonight. So let me say hello to Barry. How are you, Barry?
Good evening to Silvio and to Leslie and to all America.
That's right. Now, we've got somebody else, right, Leslie?
Yes, this would be Gary Pittman, the proprietor of the Manzanita Brewing Company, who's going to share with us how beer is made, some of the tips and tricks, and a little bit about running a microbrew in California.
All right. Well, let's say hello to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing really good.
You know, I've heard about you. Weren't you the one who organized, when you had the Tea Party meeting, weren't you the one who organized the liquids?
No, I think that's somebody else, Silvio. I managed to meet Gary through his cousin Kirsty, who I know through Barry's War Band group that I've just recently joined. And
oh, okay.
I had the privilege of going to the Manzanita Brewing Company and sampling several of their fine beers. And it was a wonderful experience, a great place, and it was a lot of fun to kind of prepare for the show.
All right, well, I'm sorry that I confused you, but Manzanita, you know what that means in Spanish?
A little apple.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you have a good name for your company.
Thank you.
All right. Now, Leslie, we're going to do a little on this day in history. Now, you told me that this is the 50th anniversary of the movie Cleopatra, right?
Yeah, yesterday they represented the New York City first public screening. 10,000 screaming fans showed up for the cinematic event of the season. Needless to say, the saga of and passionate romance of Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton had been feeding the paparazzi for many months. Elizabeth Taylor had nearly died of pneumonia, came back, got involved in a love affair that apparently steamed up the screens as the film was actually being made. It was hard to separate Burton and Taylor. So fans are naturally curious to see if this passion translated on the screen. Now, for myself, I love the movie. It is one of my all-time favorites. I suspect that Barry does not feel as strongly about this version of Cleopatra, though he has one he likes very much. But I'd like to turn it over, actually, to another thing that happened in history related also to the ancients, because we're going to highlight Cleopatra at the end of August, beginning of September, with the Battle of Actium. And Barry can share with us what really happened on this day in history.
Yes. Go ahead, Barry.
What is a terrific event was the anniversary of the death of Alexander the Great.
Wow, that's right. That's today, actually, yeah. In the year, I think, 321, wasn't it? I think 321 B.C. or A.D.?
323 B.C.
Wow.
Alexander was not quite 33 years old, and in that very short span of life of his, he became king at nearly 20. By the time he was 33 and on his deathbed, he had conquered the entire Persian Empire, which in those days encompassed most of what we think of today as the Middle East. And he'd driven, in fact, past that into modern-day Afghanistan and conquered that, drove through into what is modern-day Pakistan, conquered that as well, and was on the verge in Babylon when he died of preparing an expedition to circumnavigate the Arabian Peninsula, which was a source of great trade wealth, and they absorbed those trading cities along the what's now the Gulf Emirates area of the Persian Gulf. And eventually traced his route back up the Red Sea to Egypt, from which he was going to create a modern or an ancient version of the modern-day Suez Canal. The plan to that point would have been to move westward against Rome and Carthage, which were Carthage was already an established empire. Rome was battling other Italian city-states for supremacy. So Alexander was a young man and had a big, you know, a big future ahead of him when he died after accomplishing so much.
Right, when you think about such a young man having such an impact in world history, I mean, we're still talking about him practically 2,400 years after he died. So, yes, he was quite a personality. Well, Leslie, tell me about the program tonight and what the sequence of topics will be.
Well, basically what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about, you know, the beer making, how it's made, how, you know, different formulations have different tastes, a little of the science. I'd like Gary to tell us how he got into the business and share a little bit about his company and doing microbrew in California. But also, Barry is a chorus beer masculinity expert. So we're going to take advantage of his experience about that, you know, marketing and directing beer to the very male audience that finds it appealing.
Well, you take it away, Leslie. Take it away. I'm going to listen to this. So
all
you
right.
Take it away.
And please chime in, Sylvia, with the usually great and interesting questions. Gary, you and I met a couple weeks ago, and I have to say your Manzanita Brewing Company in Santee, very classy, lovely establishment, great for just relaxing and winding. Really delighted to have been there. Tell us a little bit about how you got started. You told me you didn't like beer to start with, and how did you evolve from being not a big fan of beer to being a master brewer?
In my 20s, I didn't really care for the taste of beer too much, and so over time, as you grow older, I guess your taste buds change a bit. So the beer started growing on me because some of the early beers were like Sierra Nevada, the Pale Ale, and now I love those beers. And, you know, it just started off with some of the beers like Sierra Nevada, Carl Strauss, the Amber Lager, and then Stone Pale Ale, you know, started drinking those and then progressed up into the bigger beers, the hoppier beers that are out there.
And then, one day,
a friend of mine was telling me while we were at work about how he went homebrewing with some friends, and I'd already done a little bit of research on it. And so I hopped on the computer and found somebody's old, basically their homebrewing kit on Craigslist that they were getting rid of, and that's where I started.
Wonderful. What was your first brewing experience like?
A little nerve-wracking, but it was actually quite interesting. I mean, nothing went wrong, and it actually went very well. And I actually took it to a company picnic and shared a few bottles with some friends. And the Ballast Point's Home Brew Mart helped out with, you know, selling me my first batch, little kit that I brewed my first batch with.
Very cool. And how did you decide to open up an actual brewing company?
Well, I'd been brewing for a few years already, and when I get into something, I tend to go a little overboard with it. So half of my garage was filled with brewing equipment, kegerator, cabinets. Basically, it was half the garage was full of nothing but stuff for brewing. And then I was at a family reunion, and one of my cousins had mentioned that he would be willing to buy it. And he goes, "Have you thought about opening a brewery?" I'm like, "No, not really." And so from there, it kind of sparked my interest in to start doing some research. And from there, I talked with one of my longtime friends, and he was my manager at that time, and we started planning this together. And then we got laid off from a company and basically took that opportunity of being, I guess, jobless and to start Manzanita.
Well, you know, it's amazing how often people who find themselves unemployed take it and use it as an opportunity to start their own business. And I think you opened in 2010. How's business been since you started?
We've been growing ever since we started, sometimes a little faster than we expect. But we've gotten to the point where we're able to control that a bit. And we're actually about to celebrate our third anniversary next month at the Santee Community Town Park.
Very good. And you've got a website, manzanitabrewing.com?
Yes.
And you're found on Facebook, correct?
Yes.
So
at Manzanita Brewing Company.
Yeah.
On the Facebook. Yep.
Now, Barry, just to kind of bring this in, because right now I'd like to discuss a little bit about beer making and help people like myself who are not very knowledgeable about beer distinguish what's the difference between like an IPA and an ale. You know, what do you recommend for different flavors? So Barry, why don't you give us a little background on what you actually do in term for the Coors Beer Company to market it to men?
Well, as far as the distinctions between ale and beer and other those sorts of fermented beverages, your other guests probably be better able to speak to that. But let me start with your last question, which was that I was hired in winter of last year to be a consultant for the Coors Brewery Company. Who were looking to reach out to the male audience, segments of the male audience that they previously were not reaching, I suppose. And we were brought together, me first, and then two other gentlemen, one a filmmaker, another one was a blogger, and we were selected for different skills. I'm former military, as many of you all in the audience know. We were formed sort of a think tank to come up with recipes and marketing campaigns and segment the target audience out there and see what kind of beer we thought would be attractive to these different segments. And these segments were, as an example, a country western, a young country western segment of the male audience, the young military segment, the World of Warcraft / Hobbit / Lord of the Rings fantasy-loving segment, the burnout segment, the pierced tattooed thug segment, what have you. And we had a different beer for each one, or if it wasn't beer, it was a malt beverage or an ale or something along those lines. And Coors, which we think of as sort of a fairly light American beer, and an old joke I learned when I was working at the Australian SAS, Special Air Service, and their elite commando force. Their joke of when we were drinking Foster's was how American beer is like making love in a canoe. And I said, how is that? And they said it was like effing close to water. and too many American beers are like that. And so my taste has always gone to stronger stuff. I like ales. I like stouts. I like particularly Scotch ales. But a couple of Belgians. I like a few Belgians, particularly Golden Drak, not the... throw a pitch in there for that particular product. That's one of my favorites, Golden Dragon. And I haven't been to Manzanita, so I can't say how I'd like that. It's on my to-do list to get down there. But in any case, Coors had us design this campaign for these different audiences, and we came up with some very unique beverages, which I hope we'll be seeing the light of day here soon.
Very good. Yeah, in fact, Gary, let's turn it around. Let's discuss a little bit about beer making. You've got four components, I'm given to understand: yeast, barley, hops, and water. Tell me about each of those ingredients and what this component does for the beer.
So we'll start with barley. That'll give you your fermentable sugars. The malting process basically starts the grain to start to sprout, and then the malting process will kill it. And during that process, it creates starches that will be eaten up while it's growing up. And then we can take those starches and convert them during our brewing process from basically starch to a fermentable and non-fermentable sugar. And then basically, and then also how they malt the barley will also give you different colors, different flavors from the barley itself.
And so then, what are different types of malt barley? What? Give me a couple of examples and how that
We have a couple base malts that are just they're we measure the coloring and level bonds, and a base malt will be majority of your grain bill for a beer, and it's only about 2 or 3 level bond in color. And then we have what we call crystal or caramel malts, and they tend to give a little bit of a caramel flavor, and they range anywhere from 20 to 60 to 120 in level bond. But they can give, depending on how that malting process was created with the caramel, it can give a raisiny flavor or a nice caramel flavor for it too. And then we have, if you want to go really dark, we have up to 500, which is like a what we call roasted barley, and that'll give it a very dark color and a roast flavoring. And sometimes you have to be careful not to overpower it with the roast flavoring, because then it gets astringent.
Yeah, and very bitter and not very savory. So what the next, after you get the barley going, I think the next step is to put the hops in?
Well, you're going to combine the barley with some water.
Mm-hmm.
And different waters will make different types of beer better. Soft water is great for, like, lagers, low hoppy beers, where a little bit harder water is great for IPAs or even dark stouts. And that's why you'll see England is great for, you'll notice that a lot of dark, malty beers come out of England. And then you see really nice, light lagers tend to come out of Germany. It's a lot of that's based on experience of over hundreds of years of brewers finding out that, hey, we can't make the same beer in Germany in England. So they tweaked their beers to make be for what region water, and a lot of it's based on the water in that region.
Fascinating. I never realized that.
So we don't do anything with our water other than filter it and remove the chlorine and chloramines out of it here at Manzanita.
Yeah,
we've played
San
with
Diego,
a little bit of water.
Not the best. You have your work cut out for you.
What's that?
I said in San Diego, our water's not the best. You have your work cut out for you.
Right, but I've also kind of went under the that if you can drink it, it's good. It's good to start brewing with.
Okay.
So
how about the hops?
And then you start putting hops when you get all your wort out of, you know, basically the sweet liquid, which we call wort. Once you move your wort from your mash tun, where you've converted the starches into sugars, you move it over into our boil kettle. And once we bring it up to a boil, that's where we add hops. And then depending on when you add the hops, we tend to do a 60-minute boil. And during that, we add closer to the start of that 60 minutes, we'll create more bittering from those hops.
Yeah,
and
so
then,
are hops adding a flavor? Are there different types of hops or different flavors?
Well, hops are really cool because they can add bittering, they can add flavor, and they can add aroma. So they actually add all three senses, if you want. And like I was saying, is the sooner they're added into the wort during the boil, the more bittering. And then you go to, let's say a 60-minute addition is going to create bittering. And depending on how much you add will will reflect on how bitter it is. And also there's a component to hops called an alpha acid, and that's how many bittering units, if you want, is different hops have different bitterness that they contribute to beer. And then if, let's say, from a 30 to a 10-minute addition, that will start to add hop flavors. They still impart a little bit of bittering, but not as much. And then from, let's say, 10 and 5 minutes to flame out, as we call, or even a little bit after flame out, gives a lot of flavoring or aroma hop characters. And then there's also adding hops after the fermentation process to even add more aromas.
Fascinating. It's really intriguing to hear all this, you know, science and chemistry and art behind, you know, a beer that people thoroughly enjoy. Now, on your website, manzanitabrewing.com, you have a selection of your beers. So I'm going to read off a couple of what I've sampled, and maybe you can tell the audience a little bit about the nuances between them. I think Gillespie Brown is about your most popular.
It's a very popular, especially during the winter months. It's a big dark beer. We just won a bronze medal at the San Diego International Beer Festival with that beer.
Congratulations. What makes it special? What difference in hops and malts did you use to get it?
So Gillespie is a 9.4% beer. And it's a big beer for many people, but it doesn't drink like it's a big beer. And what a lot of people like about it is that it's American brown ale, so it's got some chocolate notes to it, but some hop aroma and flavors to kind of help bring that beer around. But it doesn't drink like it's over a 9% beer.
No. I'm a little person, and I can't take much. And I that went down quite easy for me. It was very delicious, I have to say. It was amazing. My favorite is the Riverwalk Blonde. So tell us a little bit about that beer.
So that beer let me start with a little bit of history of that beer. Riverwalk Blonde started off with my business partner came from drinking your American lagers. Ice House was one of his favorites at that time. And we were trying to come up with a beer that he would actually enjoy. At that point, he did not like the hoppy beers. So we were trying to find a beer that he could actually drink. But I also wanted to be able to drink it too. So it had to fit both of our, you know, tastes. So we started off with taking Riverwalk. And Riverwalk is a really nice, light, refreshing beer. It's the beer that, you know, we use to introduce people to craft beers. You know, a lot of people come from, since we have Barry on the phone, Coors Light, you know, Coors Banquet, Bud Light, Budweiser. You know, they come from those, and they want to try craft beers, but if they were to try a big hoppy craft beer, they would be turned right back off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Riverwalk is a great beer to introduce people to craft beers. It's nice and light, but it's got some character to it. It's not watered down.
Yeah. No, it was very, very good, and I enjoyed it immensely. Your new one, I think it's Chaotic, which is an unusual name, and I like microbrews with that unusual name. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that blend?
Chaotic is our double IPA, and I'm what a lot of people call a hop head. I love my hops. And I wanted to produce a beer that could compete with some of the big hoppy beers on the West Coast. You know, some of my favorites are, you know, Pliny the Elder. You know, I love Double Bastard from Stone. For people that don't know, Pliny's from Russian River. There's a lot of beers that I just love, and I wanted something that, you know, could stand on its own next to these guys. And that's where Chaotic came in. You know, it's got I'm trying to remember how many pounds of hops per barrel beer, but you know, our dry hopping for a standard batch for us is like 45 pounds of hops.
Let me jump in for a second because we've got to take a break and we'll continue the conversation after the break. But I have a quick question for you about the color of the beer and the meal. Does it have anything to do like with red wine and white wine goes with certain styles of food, or is that just, as you say, regional, but not necessarily whether it's beef or whether it's fish or Italian food or anything like that?
It certainly does. I mean, if you're drinking or if you're eating, let's say, pork or chicken, Riverwalk is a great beer for that. Pale, if it's got a little bit of spiciness to it, pales also are pale ales, or any pale ales, pretty nice. You basically, like wine, you match the color of the beer to like the color of your meat. But also when you get into some of the different types of foods, like spicy foods, the IPAs, the hopness from these IPAs really kind of help balance it out, and they just blend really well together.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're gonna take a little break. We'll come back, Leslie, with our friends tonight. We'll continue our conversation about beer, but we're gonna take a break right now. We're gonna bring our friend Aaron Clary, who's up in Minnesota, and I know he loves beer as much as we do. So he also is a great writer and has a great website called Captain Capitalism. And he's gonna be joining us tonight here for a couple of minutes, and he's gonna tell us about his books and his blog. So we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're talking about beer tonight. Very interesting, informative show. I've actually been learning quite a bit listening to our show, Leslie. But we've got Aaron Clary joining us tonight. Aaron is known to our listeners as Captain Capitalism. How are you, Aaron?
Doing good. How are you guys?
Doing absolutely great. Please say hello to Leslie.
Hello, my darling.
Hello, sweetie. How's South Dakota treating you?
It's great. I'm currently getting hammered at the American Legion in Gettysburg, South Dakota. It's wonderful.
Well,
you don't have to
American...
be drinking beer by chance.
Well, you guys gave me my instructions, so I had a beer, but then, of course, I switched to my favorite Rumplements as the night went on.
Well, if you can, if you're not too impacted by what you're drinking, what can you tell us about Captain Capitalism tonight?
Well, Captain Capitalism is having a great time out here in South Dakota, but the blog itself, the namesake, that's just my website where I write daily, having a good time, and advancing capitalism and more empirical economic data than anything else. Of course, we delve into other areas, sociologically speaking. There's a element of the manosphere in dating and courting, helping out young men who may have suffered a little bit under the feminist wave here for the past 30 years, but that's basically what my blog is.
Now, you've got two great books, Worthless. We have more than two, I know, but the two that we've spoken a great deal about are Worthless and Enjoy the Decline. And with Worthless, as I've told you many times, it seems like there's an article every day talking about college degrees and kids going to college. So tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, Worthless is, it came out about, coming up on 2 years ago, and basically it was a book that warned young college-going kids, be it high school or already in college, saying, look, here are the risks of majoring in a worthless degree. So I said, look, you don't want the liberal arts, you don't want the humanities. You want to major in something like science, technology, engineering, and math. And the reason I wrote the book was because we're asking a lot of these kids nowadays in terms of money and time commitment to get some kind of degree. So that's why I wrote those books, to really help out those young kids.
Now, Enjoy the Decline is a different type of book. Talk about that one.
Enjoy the Decline, I promised myself I would write it after Barack Obama got elected, because if he did, it would have proven to me that the American public just doesn't care about America or the future of freedom or liberty. And so basically it would put those of us who really truly care about America, freedom, liberty, so forth and so on, at kind of like this impasse, like, okay, how do we enjoy our lives? What's happening to our country? So I speak rather candidly and frankly about the economic prospects and futures of the country and saying, look, we're in a decline. It's obviously irreversible because people are so clueless and ignorant to vote Barack Obama in twice. So how do you change your life psychologically? How do you adapt? How do you make investment decisions, educational decisions, things like that to benefit and enjoy your life during this decline?
Now, your Captain Capitalism website, I enjoy it a great deal. It's just you have a lot of creativity, a lot of variety in what you write. Just give us an example of the last two or three things that you've posted.
Well, one will be very controversial. It's called Women's Role in Society. I had a reader send me a question saying, okay, look, you're writing about male and female issues. What do you think women's role in society should be? And I basically said it should be whatever they want it to be. That's American. That's freedom. But at the same time, the other side of the coin is that they get to suffer the consequences for their decisions. So, for example, disproportionately major in worthless subjects, and they're the ones with worthless degrees, but somehow I have a feeling that we're going to have to bail them out of their student loans. Or they'll go and they'll claim that there's a pay gap when, well, of course there's a pay gap. When you're majoring in English and poetry while men are majoring in engineering and electricity, you know, there's a consequence for making that decision. So that's one of the posts we had recently. Another post was to show you how much of a breadth we cover, it was about how the U.S. dollar, the rally that we've seen in the U.S. dollar, can be expected to continue because compared to other countries and currencies, including China and all these ones we've been touting, the United States is not in that bad of shape. We're still horrible. We're still wretchedly in bad, pathetic shape with our debt and our inflation. But compared to other currencies, we're what I like to call the least ugly sister in the room. So I kind of delve into that and what kind of ramifications that has for currency traders as well as people who like to invest in gold and silver.
Exactly. Well, listen, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. Captain Capitalism, and you can go there and get the books, whether it's Enjoy the Decline or Worthless, and we have a link to your website and the show information. And have a beer for Leslie and I tonight. How's that?
All right, sounds good. Will do, guys.
All right, thank you so much for joining us tonight. All right, Leslie, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back for the final segment of our show tonight about beer. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. You know, as long as we're talking about beer tonight, one thing that you always associate with beer is sports, at least I do. And down in San Antonio, the Miami team and the San Antonio team, it's pretty much of a tie in the third quarter, and that's 56-53 or 56-55. Miami is leading in the third quarter, so that game will probably go down to the wire. But let me turn it back to Leslie for the second segment of our show tonight.
Thank you, Silvio. And like I said, part of what we're going to discuss tonight, besides the science and capitalism behind beer, is the history. And at this point, I'd like to bring in Barry for a second. Barry, I think you discussed a little bit about beer on an earlier show and described it as sort of a health or nutrition-rich drink. Could you expand upon that and tell us what you know about beer's early origins?
Well, beer dates back just about as far as agriculture itself dates back. They kind of went hand in hand. As humankind learned to grow grain, we learned to ferment it. And the fermenting process itself can happen accidentally. And it was probably an accident that some wild yeast blew into the process and we ended up with beer. But the oldest example of beer we have, he actually dates back about 5,000 years, though, of course, may go further back than that. But that's the oldest evidence, and that's from the Zagros Mountains of Iran, which is right at the border between Iran and Iraq. That's the mountain range that separates the two. And we know that the Sumerians had a goddess, Ninkasi, ancient Sumerian goddess of beer. She was the patron of beer, believe it or not. And to them, to the ancient peoples, beer was sort of like liquid bread. It was a high-carb, very nutritious drink, and because of the boiling process, it was safer to drink than water, which had various kinds of microbes and pathogens. So you were actually better off drinking beer. And in fact, by the Middle Ages, they have a product called small beer that is a sort of beer light, very low in alcohol, and it's drunk by everyone as a daily beverage in place of water, including children, by the way. But the earliest beer, which we have from Sumeria, we actually have pictures of it, and it's being drunk through a straw because they hadn't learned to strain, I guess, the stuff off the top, so it was very thick and all the grainy stuff. I'm not sure what the actual technical term for it is, but whatever the smash or mash or whatever that normally is strained off, but they didn't. They drank through it with a straw. Now,
yeah, there's pictures of ancient Egyptians doing exactly the same thing, probably for the same reason.
Well, in fact, yeah, Egypt also picked up beer about the same time. It was one of the favorite drinks of the pharaoh. And in fact, it was a regular gift to pharaoh was to bring him beer, which was basically brewed from barley bread. That's where they get the barley from. It also apparently was what the builders of the pyramids used to keep the slave population, or the working population, if they weren't slaves, fairly happy and docile.
Yes, that brings me to a little bit of something I want to bring Gary in on. As I was researching the history of beer, I came across an ancient Egyptian ale recipe. So, Barry, I have a question for you. Your professional opinion, what would it taste like if you added whole dates and coriander seeds to your additions for the boil? What would be the impact on that brew?
Is that to Gary or Barry?
Yes, Gary. It's Gary, yes.
Oh, okay.
Our brewmaster.
I'm trying to think what the dates would do. They would definitely add some fermentable sugars to the beer or to the wort. And then I've never tried to raise any beer, so it would be interesting.
Yeah,
I do know that we were developing beer for Coors. Well, I can't give out too much here, but for a Viking sort of flavored ale, we were actually suggesting the addition of juniper berries from Iceland. So I know you can add certain, you know, additional flavors to give it sort of a regional spin, if you will.
Right. I know we've done some goji berries from China. We've played around with quite a few different things over the years. So it's one way to try it. What I've always done is if you have a concept for a style, go off and buy a bottle of the same style, but a very mild flavoring. And then you can add that to that style of beer and then see what it's going to taste like without even actually brewing it.
And very interesting.
The earliest brewers were actually women, and probably the earliest agriculturalists were women. While men were out there hunting and gathering or making war, women were sowing grain and making beer at home. In fact, home breweries were the norm up until the Middle Ages, when the Germans actually perfected sort of a mass marketing of beer by developing standardized kegs where they could ship the beer in. But staying with ancient period for a minute, there's a great quote from the Epic of Gilgamesh dating back to about 1700 B.C., in which Gilgamesh, the great hero, has a friend who's a wild man. He's described as a wild man named Enkidu. And Enkidu has never been exposed to alcoholic beverages, simply meets his buddy Gilgamesh, who is a civilized man, sort of a Herculean figure. And he gives him beer to drink. And the quotation from the Epic of Gilgamesh is, he ate until he was full. He drank 7 pitchers of beer. His heart grew light. His face glowed, and he sang out with joy. Now, I think, as anybody who's seen me in one of my war camps can testify, that pretty much describes me at the end of a long day of drinking beer and fighting all day. Face glowing and heart singing with joy.
Yes.
And that's what has made the fermented beverages so popular over the centuries and millenniums, is that wonderful glow you get when you drink just about the right amount.
Yeah, see, the ancient Egyptians, this is how much they valued beer. They had their own goddess of beer called Peninnit. And interestingly, she was also the goddess of childbirth goddess. So you can make your assumptions as you will about beer and what it leads to. The other thing is that there is a legend of the sun god Ra, who had a daughter Hathor, the goddess of love and beauty. And the sun god Ra was a little upset with human beings not giving him enough worship. So he was going to give the profaners a little bit of a lesson by sending his daughter to slaughter them. But Hathor decided she was going to get rid of all of mankind, which made her father a little bit unhappy and concerned because he needed some worshipers. So what Ra did is got the remaining men together. They brewed beer, color it red, laid it out on a field, and Hathor ended up drinking to the point she was drunk, passed out, and basically forgot about slaughtering the rest of humanity. So beer keeps on giving.
it's the savior of mankind in that particular case.
Yes.
During the Roman and Greek period, the Romans and Greeks were, starting with the Greeks, were introduced to beer by the Egyptians. They had their own name for beer. They called it Xythos. But it never really took with the Greeks and Romans like it did with the northern peoples, for instance, the Germans, who continued drinking beer through the ancient period right through the Middle Ages. The Greeks and Romans preferred wine, and particularly as sweet varieties of wine. For instance, the Moscato today is one of the closest Mayan grapes to what the ancient ones were like. But towards the fall of the Roman Empire, when they started bringing in a lot of German soldiers to fight in the ranks of their legions, and in fact most of their soldiers by the end of the empire were German, beer became much more popular. And as the Dark Ages descended upon Europe, monasteries began brewing beer, monastic, particularly ale, monastic ale. Leslie, could I ask a question of Gary, which I'm not sure myself of?
Yes.
And that is, what is the difference between ale and beer, technically?
Beer is actually there's two different styles of yeast that we use. Ale is a beer. A lager is a beer. But you have a lager, which is a bottom fermenting yeast at cooler temperatures. And an ale is a top fermenting yeast at usually warmer temperatures. And when I say warmer, I'm only talking 68 degrees is ideal, where a lager is cooler temperature at about 55 degrees.
And that's called the cold fermentation process versus warm fermentation.
Correct. And that's why a lager takes a little longer to actually brew. And that's one of the reasons why you'll tend not to see a lager brewed in most craft breweries.
I'm guessing, at least in the earlier periods of history, that ale was lighter than beer because English in the 17th century, and it's actually starting with the Elizabethan period, and actually the 16th century, considered ale to be the national drink of Englishmen, and beer was considered sort of a Dutch thing. It was the Dutchies' drink. And in fact, a quote from a book says, talking about beer as opposed to ale, it says, "Yet it doth make a man fat," talking about beer, "and doth inflate the belly as it doth appears among the Dutch in their faces and bellies." So apparently the English looked down upon the beer-drinking Dutch as a bunch of fat, bloated fools, and themselves being good Englishmen were drinking hearty ale.
Never heard that one.
Yeah, that's not too different than what it is now, right, Barry?
I think that the Dutch have slimmed down because instead of doing beer, they're doing marijuana, at least we go to Amsterdam.
That's right, yeah. We got a couple of minutes, guys, and I just wanted to ask a quick question, Leslie. Let me jump in with a quick question to our friend from Manzanita in San Diego. Starting a beer company like you have or a brewery, are there a lot of regulations? I mean, is it the kind of industry where you got to deal with a lot of regulations? Is that something you got to go through?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say regulations, but you do have to be licensed by both the federal and the state. Each state has their own alcohol control board.
Uh-huh.
And you have to be licensed from both of them. And then you also have to find a location in most places that allow, at least here in California, the ABC will actually make you go and get approval by the city, just if you're within a city limit, to make sure that they approve also prior to them even talking to you or submitting your paperwork for a license.
Right. How many, just out of curiosity, how many breweries like yours are there in the United States? You know, we know the big ones like Budweiser and stuff like that, but let's say local ones like yours, how many are there?
In San Diego itself, last time I saw was 71 breweries in San Diego.
Wow.
And the last time I heard from the U.S., and I'm pulling it up just to try to get the right facts.
I mean, that's
and
okay, just a rough number, 10,000, 5,000?
No, it's a little bit, oh, wait, here it is. It's somewhere between 2,500, 2,360 is what the Brewers Association has listed.
So that would include Budweiser as well as yours. I mean, it's a range of companies, right?
With Budweiser, it's about 2,400, a little over 2,400.
Wow, interesting. Well, I tell you,
if you look at, I mean, if you want to know like brew pubs where you can go down and sit and have a dinner and a beer that they crafted right there on site, it's a little over 1,100. And then microbreweries like us is a little over 1,100 also. And then like regional breweries would be like Sam Adams.
Right.
Well,
they do a lot of
advertising, calls in that.
But they do a lot of advertising, Sam Adams. I mean, you see them all the time. I mean, they do a lot of national advertising, don't they?
Yes, they do. And they're the largest craft brewery in the U.S.
Wow. Let me ask you one quick question.
If I'm interject,
yeah, go ahead, Barry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, if I'm interject for me, you were talking about regulations. So I thought I'd throw this little tidbit in there. The earliest regulation concerning beer in history actually dates all the way back to the Code of Hammurabi in Babylon, about 3000 BC or so, and there actually were regulations on what taverns could sell and call beer or ale.
Wow. Now, Leslie, you're the scientist, you're the chemist. All these regulations, I mean, is that something you've done before?
I must admit, no, it's not my area, unless Gary's beer is a hazardous material, which, having tasted it, it's nothing but it's nothing like that. The only regulations I worry about would be his workers. But it's good to see, you know, his microbrew, among many others in San Diego, actually doing well. It may be one of the few industries that succeeds in California because everybody needs to drink in this state.
That's right. Well, here's what I like to do, guys. I like to each one of you to talk a little bit about yourselves. So, Barry, I know we've had you on the show before, and we're always talking about military history with you, and I'm sure we'll have you back soon for more military history. But take a minute and talk about your blog and what you do. It's a fascinating thing, what you do.
Well, thank you. I'm a former Special Forces operator, as your audience may know. I operate a blog called Deadliest Blogger. I worked on the show Deadliest Warrior for the first two seasons as the historical advisor for the show and one of the producers. In the second season. So I named the blog after that, A Deadliest Blogger, and we talk about military history. I also blog at Word Warrior, which is my political blog, and that's how I came in contact with Leslie, who taught me how to blog, in fact. And I just want to add one more thing, which is my great-great-great-granduncle was Jacob Johann Jacobson, who is the founder of the Carlsberg Brewery, the largest brewery in Scandinavia, and in fact was the first time in history isolated the yeast cells and were able to actually describe what yeast really was in the 1800s.
Wow.
So a little bit of beer history there is my ancestors that keep involved in beer making.
So you have a connection to the brewery. That's great. Gary, talk about yourself. Take a minute and talk about your business.
We've been going for about 3 years, and next month, July 20th, we're celebrating our third anniversary at the Town Center Community Park here in Santee. We're going to – actually, I just counted the list, and we're going to have 17-plus beers available, and it starts with a VIP about noon, and we have a couple of food vendors coming in, Slater's 50-50 for people that are in San Diego or even Southern California, which they do really good bacon and hamburger meat-type foods. That's where the 50-50 comes in. It's supposedly 50% bacon, 50% hamburger meat. Very dangerous.
Guys, one of the things that happens when we do these shows is that there's always more material than time. So we can't get it all in the hour. So sometimes we have to stop. But I hope we have the opportunity. I know, Barry, we're going to have you back many times. And, Gary, I hope we have you back as well. I would like to talk to you sometime about not just beer, but what it's like to be an entrepreneur, you know, capitalism. That's a topic that we enjoy in the show. So I hope you'll come back and tell us a little bit more about that and what it's like to start a business and some of the things that you go through. Leslie, that might be a good topic sometime.
Yeah, and we definitely, you know, mancinitabrewing.com, and he's on Facebook. And I know I'm definitely going to hit that party in the park. So hoping to see you there, Gary.
Well,
thank you very much.
Maybe I can get there, Barry. Gary, I don't know. Maybe I can get a. Maybe there's a cheap flight to San Diego that I can.
You know,
take
I gotta say,
guys.
Beer Summit. We gotta have a Beer Summit out in San Diego. You
That's
and Aaron.
Yeah, we gotta have one. We'll do the show from there. How's that?
That sounds
Barry,
perfect.
It's called research. You come out here and check out all 71 breweries.
That's exactly right, and we'll write it off as a research trip. There you go. There you go. As long as we don't get audited, as long as we save our receipts, we should be okay. Gary, thank you so much. Barry, thank you so much. Leslie, take a second and tell us about next week.
Next week is going to be a citizen activism update. I'm going to have Charles Fettinger on. We're going to talk about National Security Agency scanning Americans. We're going to talk about the IRS. We're going to talk about any other developments. We may have one or other two of our favorite Tea Party activists on, depending on who I schedule, but Charles is definitely a go. And the following week is Victory Girl. Kate and Kit of that website, Two Savvy Conservative Women, and they're going to tell us a little bit how to protect your privacy in the midst of this federal scan gate.
That's right. Well, very very good topics, Leslie. As always, thank you so much for all your help on Thursday nights. It's always a treat to do the show with you on Thursday nights, and I thought tonight was great. I'm just sorry that sometimes we run out of time, but hopefully, as I said, we can come back and fill any if we missed anything. We can always come back at a future show. And,
well, what's
and
nice
do a
thing
segment.
About beer? There's Oktoberfest.
That's right.
So
that's
we can
right.
come back to this topic then.
That's exactly right. Well, thank you so much, Leslie. Thank you so much. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Gary, and thank you, Leslie, and all you guys have a lot of fun there in San Diego drinking beer. All right, good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and I hope you had a good beer. I hope you had something good to eat and a good beer, and that's always a great combination. Good night, everybody.